What do Rasputin, Tupac, and Pharaoh Ramses III have in common? No, it's not the weirdest boy band ever. They all met their end at the hand of an assassin. From seizing power to silencing dissidents, Assassins unpacks the moments in which someone decides that murder is the move. Search Assassins with Aslan Pahari on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From Wurundjeri Country, I'm Luke Sidham Dundon, and today on The Breakfast Wrap, the federal government is introducing its much-anticipated environment law reforms to Parliament.
I'm very confident, Sally, that we can pass these reforms. The real question is who with and how soon.
You'll hear from the Minister and his counterpart across the aisle.
Great to be in the hot seat after Murray.
And you'll find out about the politics at play.
In doing this, he manages to have convinced the coalition that he's going to do a deal with the Greens, and the Greens are pretty convinced he's going to do a deal with the coalition.
Then we'll head to Ireland to hear about a corporate casualty.
So there's blood all over the floor in Ireland this morning.
Intrigued? You bet. All those details coming up later on. We'll also get the latest on worrying developments in Sudan as a paramilitary takes over a key city.
The United Arab Emirates has been arming the rapid support forces. Basically, the West's relationship with the UAE has been prioritised over the lives of these people.
From the Radio National Breakfast team, this is The Breakfast Wrap. Well, first up, I hope you enjoyed hearing Lexi Junawick steer you through the best of Radio National Breakfast. She's done a stellar job for the last fortnight. But today, quite the federal policy story to work through. The government is confident it can get its environment law reforms through Parliament, but neither the Coalition nor the Greens support its current form. Now, before we bring you the Minister and the Shadow Minister's perspectives, I'll let our political correspondent, Melissa Clark, explain just what's about to be nutted out in Parliament.
Look, at the moment, there's a lot of scepticism from both the Coalition and the Greens as to whether or not this package of bills that will come together will actually get the balance right between the competing desires to speed up approvals, but also strengthen in protection for the environment. Now, there's elements around, well, how will this streamlining of approvals work, given current laws already allow for the federal government to strike deals with state governments to avoid duplication. As well as making that easier, it seems these laws will allow that to be done at a more granular level. So it could potentially be streamlined around a particular project or at a regional level so that not every approval across an entire state would have a streamlined process, but perhaps just some discrete areas. We've got questions being asked about, the federal government has said that the minister will have the final say, and that's been key in this debate, but at what point might the minister intervene is a question. Likewise, Murray Watt's talked about there being being able to rule that there's an unacceptable outcome for developments in some places, so there's a bit of a red light there. But again, the definitions aren't something that we're clear on at this point. So that means, one, we need to see what they are, but two, that's where the government has room to move to tinker on some of these definitions if that is what is going to get either the Coalition or the Greens over the line.
And Mel, what happens next? How will these negotiations play out? Because there's not a lot of time.
That's absolutely right. And the government is really trying to move quickly. It sees that the longer the debate here plays out, the more danger there is in it falling over. Effectively, the longer the debate goes on, the less likely they feel they are for this to be a successful process for the government. We fully expect that there will be a Senate committee that is set up to examine the legislation. That's a pretty normal process, but the government is pushing for that to be a very short period of time so that they can come back in the final sitting week of the year, which will be the last week of November, have that committee finish and then try and push to get a vote through on that. Now, there is certainly a push right from the highest levels of government to try and have this issue resolved one way or another by the end of the year, because it doesn't want it to be a lingering issue against which either the Coalition or the Greens would campaign against it during the course of this term. There's also the internal issues Labor has to manage, because we know that there are some backbenchers who are quietly raising concerns about being able to explain to the public why Labor is rejecting some of the requests that the Greens have put forward, in particular around a climate trigger or refusing to get rid of the exemption for native forest logging. We know that there is concern about how to present this as both a win for speeding up approvals, but as also a win for the environment. So we've got a lot to play out in the next couple of weeks, but the push is on from the government.
Mel Clark there. Well, let's get to that push. Murray Watt is the Minister for the Environment and Water, and he joined Sally Sarah on Radio National Breakfast.
This latest reform to the country's environment laws comes after two failed attempts in the past 5 years. How confident are you that you can get the job done?
I'm very confident, Sally, that we can pass these reforms. The real question is who with and how soon. You're right, this has been a very long journey. In fact, today it's 5 years to the day since Graham Samuel handed down his review to then Environment Minister Susan Lee. And what has been happening ever since is that we've been going around and round in circles. So I think the broader community, the business community, and anyone who cares about our environment recognises that after all of those attempts to get this done, it really is now or never. If we ever want to pass these reforms, we've got to get moving with them. We can't let this go around in circles for five more years, because every time we wait and every time we get delayed, we see the environment suffer and we see really important housing, renewables and other projects get held up in red tape.
How do your draft laws define a project with unacceptable impact on the environment, which would trigger immediate refusal?
Yeah, so as with much of the bill, this comes directly out of a recommendation from Graham Samuel, where he said that we needed a strong definition in the legislation to set out what kind of impacts on the environment would be simply unacceptable and therefore be rejected. The definition relates to each of the matters of national environmental significance that the Commonwealth Government regulates. And what it comes down to is, for example, an action that would seriously impair the viability of a species, or it would undertake action that would result in irreplaceable damage to the environment. So the sorts of examples that I've been giving are if someone wanted to mine under Uluru, or if someone wanted to clear habitat in a way that was going to drive a species to extinction, I think most Australians would accept that those kind of activities simply should not occur.
What if there are competing interests? Say it's part of our critical minerals priorities.
Well, every project would be assessed on its own merits. And whether we're talking about a critical minerals mine or a processing plant or a wind farm or a housing development, what we need to do is to be able to assess whether it would have those sorts of impacts that are simply unacceptable. If the answer is yes, and it's the kind of project where you simply cannot avoid or minimise those environmental impacts. Obviously, if a project can demonstrate that it can avoid or minimise those impacts, then it would proceed through a full assessment under the Act. But this is a way of quickly saying no to projects that are just completely unacceptable.
These changes would give you as Minister the power to override some environmental rules if a project is deemed to be in the national interest. Are you comfortable in giving that power to the opposition if they return to government?
Yeah, I mean, what we've tried to do all along here is deliver on the recommendations of Graham Samuel. And again, this was an explicit recommendation of his that governments of the day should, in very rare circumstances, have the ability, when something is in the national interest, to approve a project proceeding, even if it doesn't meet the usual environmental standards. What we've said in the bill is to try to give a flavour of the types of projects that we're talking about would be most likely defence or security projects, actions that may be undertaken in responding to a natural disaster. We have made the point that should be rarely used, that there's got to be transparency with the Minister of the day issuing a statement of reasons justifying why they've done that. And just to be clear, that decision to approve a project in the national interest would occur after a full assessment was done.
Both the Coalition and Greens have criticised aspects of the bill that they've seen. Why haven't you got either side on board after working on the drafting for so long?
It's not that common, Sally, that a bill that's this complex and controversial that you have a deal before it's even introduced into the Parliament. I'd love to be a magician, but I'm not quite that. We will be introducing the bill to the House of Reps today. And as you would be aware, I've undertaken several meetings with each of the Coalition and the Greens. What I'm hearing from the Coalition is that this is too good for the environment. I'm hearing from the Greens it's too good for business.
What aspects of the bill are not up for negotiation, or is everything on the table?
To me, it comes down to the principles that are underpinning this legislation rather than the detail. And the principles have always been delivering a bill that is consistent broadly with the Samuel Review, given that that was widely supported by stakeholders at the time, that it does deliver a real gain for both the environment and for business. And I guess what we're hearing from the Coalition and the Greens at the moment is that one side wants more for business and one side wants more for the environment. But the secret source of Graham Samuel's report was that he put forward a balanced package that delivered wins for both the environment and business. So in weighing up what amendments people are seeking, I want to make sure that we come through this debate with a bill that genuinely does deliver real improvements for the environment and also for business.
Are you still aiming to get this bill passed before the end of the year?
Yes, I certainly am. Every day we wait, we see the environment go backwards and we see houses, renewables and other projects getting held up in delays. So I think there's a strong national interest in getting these reforms passed as quickly as possible, and I'll be doing everything I can to make that happen this year.
Murray Watt there, the Minister for the Environment and Water, facing what sounds like a pretty busy end to the year. Well, before we get to the federal opposition, I want to just bring back in Melissa Clark for a bit of analysis on what you just heard.
That was certainly a very bullish approach from Murray Watt. He's saying he's confident. The question is who with and how quickly. Look, I think you can see from Murray Watt that this is the political approach that is being taken. He is very carefully left options open in the drafting of this bill that is being put forward so that he can strike a deal with either the Coalition or the Greens. And we can see that in the number of elements in the bill that can be put in or taken out or adjustments made to definitions or the timing with which they come into force in order to try and get one party or the other over the line. And in doing this, he manages to have convinced the Coalition that he's going to do a deal with the Greens, and the Greens are pretty convinced he's going to do a deal with the Coalition, which I think gives you some extent of the political skill that Murray Watt has applied here to have everyone on their toes thinking, can they negotiate an outcome they're happy with, and is there urgency for me to do that so that they don't do it with the other party? There's very much a political operation going on in how this has been set up. And look, maybe an example I can give you of that is the way that it was clear in the answer that Murray Watt gave there about exemptions for native forest logging from environmental laws, which there currently are. You can have, he's saying the standards will be applied to the regional forestry agreements that coming on. Look, I don't want to get bogged down in the detail of it other than to say, note the language he used in describing it. He's saying that's the direction we're going. There's clearly room to move on the issue of native forest logging from the language he's given. On other issues like a climate trigger, he has not shied away from being definitive in saying we are not doing this. But when it comes to elements like the native forest exemptions, that's the direction we're going in. There is very clearly room to manoeuvre. And on many aspects of this bill, we are likewise seeing similar flexibility being displayed by Murray Watt.
And he's regarded by the Prime Minister and within government ranks as a bit of a minister for fixing things.
Well, that's right. I mean, you can see they want to get it through by the end of the year. He's seen as the man who can deliver that, and delivering an outcome seems to be the priority for Labor, and the details of it less significant than just the need to get it done.
Mel Clark there, sharing her analysis with Sally Sarah on Radio National Breakfast. Well, this morning we also heard from the federal opposition. Angie Bell is the Shadow Minister for the Environment. She did a quick change with Murray Watt in our Parliament House studio.
Angie Bell, welcome back to Radio National Breakfast.
Great to be in the hot seat after Murray.
There you are. Yes. You've seen what the government is proposing. You've made it clear that you're unhappy with elements of this bill. Do you think you can negotiate to the point where it's acceptable in your view, or are you completely ruling it out?
Very good question, Sally. We've entered into good faith negotiations with the government, as the Minister just outlined. We have met a number of times. That's true. In terms of a way forward, at the moment these bills are unworkable, as I have outlined several times. What Australians should be thinking about is if Labor were to do a deal with the Greens, what the consequences would be for productivity, for jobs, and for investment in our country. And so, of course, we will continue in those good faith negotiations with the government. But at the moment, the way the bills are, they are unworkable.
So does that put the onus also back on the coalition? If having a deal done with the Greens is the worst possible outcome, do you need to compromise here to make sure that you're the one who's in the negotiating seat?
Well, certainly it's not our job to make a bad bill better, but there are some areas that we have concerns on, and we'll continue to put those areas forward as a problem. For example, the wide-ranging powers of the EPA. It'll be a statutory appointment that will not report directly to the minister. The minister won't be able to sack that individual. It'll have to be the Governor-General that does that. And so that is a problem in terms of what that outcome might look like in terms of broad sweeping powers, definitely. We've got problems around unacceptable impacts. The minister was just talking about that. We'd like to see that come out of the legislation and into the national standard, which is what was in the Graham Samuel review. So the minister has cherry-picked out of the Graham Samuel review different areas in this legislation. The EPA was not in the Graham Samuel review. Graham Samuel said he wanted to see a commissioner, not a statutory appointment that is not able to be sacked by the minister.
And you were just listening to a portion of the Shadow Environment Minister Angie Bell's interview from Radio National Breakfast. The sum of all fears. That's how this next guest is going to describe the situation in the Sudanese city of Al-Fashir. The city has been under siege for 18 months, hundreds of thousands of civilians trapped in desperate conditions, cut off from aid. And this week, the Sudanese army withdrew from the city. There are growing reports that the paramilitary RSF group has been committing mass killings and other atrocities there. And one of the groups documenting the horrors is from Yale. The body's executive director is Nathaniel Raymond, and he came on with Sally Sara this morning.
Nathaniel, this is a very important story, but as often happens with Sudan, there's been limited media coverage. You've been monitoring the situation since the start of the latest conflict. What have you been seeing in Al-Fashir in recent days?
The past 48 hours in Al-Fashir can be simply summarized as the sum of all fears. We see objects visible in satellite imagery that measure about 1.3 to 2 meters, which is the average length of a human body lying horizontally on the ground. Those objects were not visible on Sunday before RSF, the Rapid Support Forces, took over the city. Additionally, we're seeing clear evidence of house-to-house clearance operations by pickup trucks with heavy machine guns mounted on the back in the areas where the vehicles are operating. We see these objects consistent with human bodies appearing in side streets that are being blocked off by the trucks. And in some cases, we see a red discoloration spreading around the objects consistent with pools of blood.
Some of this imagery is really disturbing, and this blood can literally be seen from space in some of this monitoring via satellite. Why is this killing happening, and who's doing it, Nathaniel?
This killing is best summarized as the final battle of the Darfur genocide that began in the early 21st century in 2003-2005. The killing that's occurring is happening by the Rapid Support Forces against four Nzagawa non-Arab people from Darfur that fled to Al-Fashir 20 years ago seeking safe haven.
Is the international community paying enough attention to what is happening, Nathaniel?
We've briefed the UN Security Council privately six times since the summer of 2023, saying this was going to happen. Despite a UN Security Council resolution passed last summer, UN Security Council Resolution 2736, calling for a ceasefire in Al-Fashir, there has been no concerted effort to protect these people. At the end of the day, what is happening here, as we learned in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, that reported U.S. intelligence documents showed that the U.S. knows
the United Arab Emirates has been arming the rapid support forces. Basically, the West's relationship with the UAE has been prioritized over the lives of these people.
You've spent your career monitoring conflicts around the world. How does the situation currently in Al-Fasher compare to what you've seen elsewhere?
It's only been 48 hours, but I can tell you in 15 years of analyzing mass killing through satellite imagery and 26 years as a war crimes investigator, I've not seen anything like this in terms of the velocity of violence and the ferocity of the killings.
Nathaniel Raymond is from the Yale School of Public Health that this week reported on the mass killings perpetrated by the RSF paramilitary force in Sudan. Well, we're going to end with something a little bit different today, a story about a corporate casualty that sounds like an episode from Succession. The chairwoman of building materials giant James Hardie Industries has been ousted in what's been labelled an unprecedented wave of investor anger. Anne Lloyd was voted off the multinational's board following a string of controversial decisions by the company. That included the $14 billion purchase of American rival AZEK, an outdoor decking firm, leaving shareholders blindsided. So if it all sounds a little confusing and you're wondering why you should care about this story, may I present to you Dean Pash, a corporate governance researcher.
Normally, in the polite confines of corporate Australia, people are tapped on the shoulder and they're asked to go and spend more time with their family. They're never publicly defenestrated. So this is without precedent. The last time I can think of a set of directors being voted off an Australian company of size was AMP, but that was after the Royal Commission. This is something where investors have, taken matters into their own hands. And it's not just her. Two of her colleagues have gone as well, plus three other resolutions at the meeting defeated. It's quite without precedent.
So, Dean, why were investors so angry?
Well, series of unfortunate events. They bought a massive company in the US and they issued a whole bunch of shares to pay for it and took on a whole bunch of debt. But it was more than anything else the use of loopholes in the Australian listing rules to facilitate that transaction. Plus, no one was being held for account. They were issuing shares in their own company, which was earning, best house on the best street for what could only be described as a much inferior product. And they paid way too much.
Dean, the ASX is now looking to change listing rules to require investors to get more of a say on any takeover by a major company that involves raising more than 25% of its capital. Is this likely to happen?
It is. So the ASX issued a consultation paper to stop this sort of loophole that James Hardie had exploited in order to, do that ASX deal. And if that goes through, which we hope it will in the next 12 months, that will be, the only silver lining that will come out of the James Hardie mess.
What do you think the mood will be like at the company's annual shareholder meeting today?
Well, no one will be there for a start, Sally, because it's in Ireland. So James Hardie is actually an Irish company. So it's probably a somber occasion with a few company directors and a company secretary in a barren building, windowless building in Ireland. But Australian shareholders who are dialing in virtually will be rejoicing. Two-thirds of shareholders who turned out to vote voted the chair off the board. They also voted against the pay rise for the directors. This is how tenured they were. Plus, the $25 million package for the CEO had a component that was required to be approved in advance. And that was disapproved as well. So there's blood all over the floor in Ireland this morning.
And that's Dean Pash there, a corporate governance researcher. He's also the co-founder of Ownership Matters, a governance advisory service, speaking to Sally Sara on Radio National Breakfast. Well, that is it for the Breakfast Wrap for today. As always, you can catch Radio National Breakfast live from 5:30 a.m. on Radio National or the ABC Listen app. Every single story covered in depth by Sally Sara and our team. And then later on, The Breakfast Wrap, right here on Radio National and the ABC Listen app. All the interviews you've heard were produced by the ABC Radio National Breakfast team, and The Breakfast Wrap was produced by Josie Asher. I'm Luke Sidham-Dundon. See you same time, same place, tomorrow.